This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Are airlines working together to drive up ticket prices? Because working together, if proven, sounds like an antitrust violation. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. Major U.S. airlines are now under federal investigation, with the Justice Department looking into whether they may be illegally coordinating to keep ticket prices up. Marketplace's Mark Garrison reports from New York.
If there's a smoking gun tape of backslapping, whiskey-drinking airline execs in a back room setting prices, the government has a pretty easy case to make. But it probably won't be that simple. Let's focus on what we do know.
Capacity, for the first time really ever, has grown in recent years more slowly than the economy, and that's why airfares have risen.
Seth Kaplan is editor of Airline Weekly. If airlines decide to fly fewer planes, that's a legal business decision. But if they work together to coordinate cutting capacity, that can mean jail time. Airline execs have recently talked loudly and publicly about the importance of keeping capacity down. Investigators will weigh whether that's just public companies simply communicating to shareholders or part of an illegal coordination scheme. Either way, low fuel costs are pushing prices down anyhow.
Fares are rather high at the moment, even though fuel is cheaper, but that never lasts very long. And in fact, it's changing even as we speak.
In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Greece update now. Banks in Greece remain closed today but are still functioning due to continued emergency cash from the European Central Bank. Negotiations with creditors appear to be on pause. Pending a public referendum Sunday, the government is recommending a no vote on Europe's bailout conditions, but no telling which way the vote is leaning since polling has been contradictory. Now let's check the numbers. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up about 0.2% each. The FTSE in London is up 0.2%. The dollar is down slightly, but still under $1.11 for a euro. In about an hour and a half, the government's calculation of employment and unemployment in America for June. The collective guess by economists, as surveyed by Reuters, is 230,000 new jobs. That will be down from 280,000, and unemployment falling from 5.5% to 5.4%, perhaps. In New York City, policy encourages low-income housing integrated into new luxury buildings. But what have developers done in some cases? Put in special entrances for the poorer people. Now New York's Mayor Bill de Blasio has tried to ban what have been dubbed poor doors. From the Marketplace Wealth and Poverty Desk, our Noel King reports.
The building where all the fuss about poor doors started has 55 affordable units. Nearly 90,000 people applied for them. Nicholas Bloom, co-editor of Affordable Housing in New York, says if developers can't build separate entrances, they'll find something else.
I think we'll have to wait and see. What will developers come up with as a way around this system? Because, I mean, you know, people, you know, who are paying significantly more, are they willing to, you know, cross-subsidize people who are paying much, much less?
Some developers put affordable and market-rate housing in the same complex, but in different buildings. Mark Joseph is a professor at Case Western Reserve University. He says if the city's goal is simply more affordable housing,
if a developer is going to produce that 30 units separately, but do it in a building that is as high quality and in a thriving, revitalizing neighborhood, that's one question.
But he says if the city's goal is integration across incomes, it helps for people to share a building. In New York, I'm Noel King for Marketplace.
Next, a conversation with Elizabeth Holmes, who at 31 is the youngest female self-made multi-billionaire in America, according to Forbes. The company Holmes created, Theranos, developed a home blood testing kit that could challenge the business model of medical labs. Now, this spring, she was invited by the White House to join the president's Ambassador for Global Entrepreneurship Project, where she'll focus on attracting women to science, tech, engineering, and math fields, as well as improving global public health. She spoke from her office in Palo Alto, California. Ms. Holmes, good morning.
Good morning.
So I was trying to think about how to describe your firm. Is it fair to say it's an attempt to democratize medical testing, take it out of the hands of the elite?
Very much so on democratization. And we believe that every person should have the ability to afford lab testing and that prices should be transparent. And we've made it possible to collect blood with much smaller samples. So tiny drops from a finger in locations that are accessible late at night or on a weekend and close to where people live.
Help me with this, though. I was over at the doctor the other day. She said, your prescription is don't look this up on the internet. Do you think we have the capacity on our own to evaluate some of this data that you might be able to give us?
Absolutely. People have the capacity to engage with and understand this information, and I think that's critical. Our issue in our country is not people are engaging with this data too much. It's people are not getting access to the data. So empowerment and education is critical. The reason that that empowerment is critical is exactly so that people can begin to engage with their physicians in a preventative care model.
I asked Bill Gates a version of this many years ago, so I don't feel quite as bad asking you. You left Stanford, some would say drop out, to start the company. How's that decision shaped your career?
I always believe that all great things come from finding whatever it is that you truly love. And for me, I found the mission that I felt like I was born to do. When you find that, everything else, dropping out of college, you know, the hours, the blood, sweat, and tears literally you have to go through is something you actually enjoy. What I say when I have the chance to engage with young women and is find your passion and then figure out what training you need to be the best. And sometimes that means you need a PhD. Get to that point where you have the foundation, the training, the education to be able to pursue your dream. And that's different for every person.
Elizabeth Holmes is founder and CEO of Theranos. We talked to her from Palo Alto. Ms. Holmes, thank you for this.
Thank you.
Now, a while back, I talked to another pioneering woman trying to shift medical testing toward the patient and away from big labs. Her name is Anita Goel of a company called NanoBioSim. If you're interested, we just tweeted a link to that at Marketplace. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.